Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Let me say to the families who lost loved ones on 9/11 that we have never forgotten your loss, nor wavered in our commitment to see that we do whatever it takes to prevent another attack on our shores. And tonight, let us think back to the sense of unity that prevailed on 9/11. I know that it has at times frayed, yet today's achievement is a testament to the greatness of our country and the determination of the American people.
President Obama, from his speech last night announcing the death of Osama bin Laden after a decade of what the AP this morning called history's biggest manhunt. You've been hearing the details all morning. We've got lots of special guests as we go along on this show, but a big portion of our program today as we continue special coverage will be to give voice to you, since it was New York that was attacked more than anywhere at bin Laden's hands on 9/11/2001. And, you know, you can be as circumspect and above it all as you want to be and recoil from those chanting USA, USA at the Mets game last night or at the World Trade Center site overnight. But we also know, even in the most politically progressive circles, there is a little bit of fist bumping and fist pumping going on today. It doesn't take away anything you may think about the root causes of 9/11 or the Iraq War or whatever. But somewhere in there, we acknowledge, for many of you, we know there is an element of the daily news headline today which simply says, rot in hell. When I heard the news at home last night, my seventh grader asked me, Daddy, are people going to have to say they're sad because he died? And that was a pretty honest question. So among the other things we are doing today, we are inviting your epitaphs for Osama bin Laden on our Brian Lehrer Show Facebook wall. On the comments page at WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show or tweet at Brian Lehrer on Twitter with your epitaphs for Osama bin Laden. Here lies fill in the blank. And we will open the phones first for any loved ones of 9/11 victims and any Iraq and Afghanistan war vets or loved ones of Iraq and Afghanistan war vets. You all deserve to go first today. You put your lives on the line, voluntarily or involuntarily, and your family's lives. So call us up, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. If you lost anyone on 9/11, if you served in the wars that resulted from 9/11 or lost anyone who has, call up and tell us what you're thinking or feeling right now. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And we'll open the phones for you first and for other people later as we go along. And let's just start with Karen in Westchester. You're on WNYC. Karen, thanks so much for calling in. Hello. Karen, are you there? Karen, I'm sorry, we're having a little phone problem, but I think we have you now. Go ahead, try again.
Okay, hello?
Hi, we got you.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My husband was very badly injured in the towers at 9/11. He works for Cantor Fitzgerald. And he had this same reaction. He and I both were thinking last night, well, there is obviously some sense of relief Osama bin Laden is not out there to kill other people. By the same token, the dancing in the streets type of thing and this celebration of joy takes me back to 9/11 when we saw people in other countries dancing in the streets with joy that there were people killed at 9/11 here. And it takes me back to the message in Exodus, which is God saying, why are you to the angels when they sang after Pharaoh and them were killed in the Red Sea? Why are you singing? It's a mixed feeling, but it's still, I think the dancing with the joy while we should have relief is difficult.
Karen, I hear you. I definitely hear you. And I know a lot of people have all of these mixed reactions, and I'm glad your husband survived, even though injured, one of the few injured in 9/11. Usually you know, it was just people died or people got out. I remember the day, and that the hospitals, the emergency rooms were all cranked up and nobody was coming in because people either died or they got out. So I'm sorry that your husband was burned, and I appreciate you calling in with those heartfelt first thoughts to get us going today. Jordan in Manhattan. Jordan, you're on WNYC, and you kind of want to react to Karen, right? Jordan, you there? All right. Let's get Jordan up. Hi, Jordan.
My cousin, Mark Rosenberg, died in Marsh and McLennan on September 11th. And I think this is totally an occasion worth celebrating. He was a horrible, evil person, and there is no reason that human beings, maybe not angels, but human beings cannot rejoice at the death of such an enemy. I hope that all such enemies of the United States and freedom and life suffer similar fates.
When I mentioned the cover of the Daily News today, which says Rot in Hell, is that where you are, first and foremost?
I mean, I think I'm less focused on heaven and hell and really on the state of our world. It's an incredibly fractured place with an enormous suicide cult with a horrible ideology opposed to freedom and life. And I think that as much as we can in this world address such evil, that would be great. And if that means that those evil people die, well, that's just the way it has to be.
You know, the Daily News was even a little more pointed than the Post's big headline, which simply says Bin Laden dead. But the Post cover also says vengeance at last. Is vengeance what you're expressing here?
I don't think so, Leonard. I think, you know, we're really focused on, I'm focused on protecting life and those who care about the well-being of human beings and freedom. And it's really less about vengeance than just making sure that if someone's out to kill you, well, then by all means, kill them first. And Osama bin Laden killed thousands of people. His ideology, which has spread, unfortunately, since September 11th, and not due to the United States. But that ideology is really what's problematic and what must be fought. And so if that ideology is eradicated, then great. Is it about revenge? Not per se.
Mm-hmm. Jordan, thank you very much for your call. We appreciate it. Our lines are open at first, and we'll take other groups of callers later. For people who lost loved ones on 9/11 or any Iraq or Afghanistan war vets or any families of Iraq and Afghanistan war vets, as we talk about the killing of Osama bin Laden. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Colleen Kelly joins us now for a few minutes, co-founder of the group September 11th, Peaceful Tomorrows, an organization founded by family members of those killed on September 11th who, quote, have united to turn our grief into action for peace. Colleen, welcome back to WNYC. Thank you for coming on this of all days.
Thank you, Brian, for making this so important.
And we've spoken before about you as a peace activist coming out of your loss and 9/11. Did even you have a little bit of a fist bump with somebody or a fist pump by yourself last night?
No fist bump or fist pump. I was sitting with my daughter as we watched Bin Laden's speech. She's a 14-year-old.
You mean President Obama's speech?
Sorry.
People
yeah,
are going to make that. People
Ugh.
Are going to make that mistake, that Obama Osama mistake, all day. So.
Yeah. So yes, exactly. The president's speech, and I really take to heart what I heard your son say, asking about it. Does this mean we have to feel sad? And I don't think feelings are right or wrong. I felt enormous relief, just tremendous, tremendous relief, and that was the overwhelming feeling for me.
How about this expression of lack of closure that I heard from somebody in a news clip who was out at Ground Zero last night, who said, "Well, I'm glad, but this won't bring back my brother, my father, my son." So I'm not all that glad.
That word closure is a funny thing. I don't know that there's ever any closure. My brother Bill is not coming back to this world, and there's still a lot of work to be done. We're still involved in 2.5 wars, and there's many things happening as a direct result of September 11th that still need to be addressed in our country, certainly, and around the world.
Colleen Kelly, co-founder of September 11th Peaceful Tomorrows. Thank you for joining us for a few minutes.
Thanks, Brian.
Sorry once again for your loss. Absolutely. And glad we could talk on this day. Here's a little bit more of President Obama from his speech last night as we take calls from family members of those lost on 9/11 and Iraq and Afghanistan war veterans.
The American people did not choose this fight. It came to our shores and started with the senseless slaughter of our citizens. After nearly 10 years of service, struggle, and sacrifice, we know well the costs of war. These efforts weigh on me every time I, as Commander-in-Chief, have to sign a letter to a family that has lost a loved one, or look into the eyes of a service member who's been gravely wounded.
And from there to Brad in New London. Brad, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I served for 8 years in the Air Force very proudly, and one of my colleagues in the Air Force, who I served with for several years, just died last week in Afghanistan. And so I've been wrestling with that, and it's been really difficult. And wrestling with that news that I just got, and then just last night, the news that Osama bin Laden died, I got to tell you, I mean, it just really... really cathartic and really powerful. I think that's going to be the truth for a lot of veterans who have lost friends in Afghanistan, because I don't know, there's something about a sense of completeness to it, and it somehow seems fitting. I totally respect the worries about, you know, the celebratory nature. It seems weird to celebrate a man's death, but, you know, I think the objective reason behind the celebration matters. The woman who was speaking earlier about the people who celebrated in other countries on 9/11 that really was disgusting to many of us, what made it disgusting was that they were celebrating innocent people's deaths. But this was not an innocent man's death. This man was liable for the crimes he committed. And so I think it's fine to celebrate justice when it occurs.
No moral equivalency there, is your point.
Yeah.
Doesn't bring back your buddy, though, right?
No. Phil's gone, and his wife and his children are going to have to, you know, his children are going to have to grow up without him. And that's true for countless people, but the same for the 9/11 victims and many of the victims and Osama bin Laden. And so I think the guy was continuously dangerous too. I mean, that needs to be said. If he could have carried out another 9/11 tomorrow, he would have. And so there's a sense in which you can make the case that this was not some sort of extrajudicial execution, but that this was a legitimate, justified act of defense of innocence against this dangerous man.
Brad, thank you for your service. Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We'll continue in a minute.
So Americans understand the costs of war. Yet, as a country, we will never tolerate our security being threatened, nor stand idly by when our people have been killed. We will be relentless in defense of our citizens and our friends and allies. We will be true to the values that make us who we are. And on nights like this one, we can say to those families who have lost loved ones to Al-Qaeda's terror, justice has been done.
President Obama, again, from his speech last night. Now, listeners, coming up in about 15 minutes, we're going to open up the phone specifically for Pakistani Americans because of the role of the two countries together in this operation yesterday, and for any other Muslims because, you know, I don't know other media who are doing this today, but for us, part of this moment is about acknowledging that the vast majority of you have never been bin Laden fans, and that he made your life much more difficult in the United States with all the backlash against Muslims. So coming up, not right now, but hold it for 15 minutes or so, and we'll start taking phone calls from Pakistani Americans, any other Muslim Americans who want to call with your thoughts and feelings today. We started with the families of 9/11 victims and Iraq and Afghanistan war vets and your loved ones. Now, anybody. The phones are open for anybody with any of your thoughts or feelings on this morning after President Obama announced the killing of Osama bin Laden at the hands of U.S. Navy SEALs, we're now learning, as well as CIA operatives. 212-433-WNYC. Our lines are just wide open for everybody. 212-433-9692. And by the way, later, Bobby Ghosh from Time will go through the blow-by-blow with us, and we'll really pick apart and break down how they did this and how it got done, and then we'll do some global analysis of what it means politically in terms of security and so forth. So we're going to do all that stuff today, but definitely perhaps the most important thing we can do here on a New York radio station on this day after bin Laden attacked us 10 years ago is take your phone calls. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. As your calls are coming in, WNYC's Bob Henley is with us. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
And you have covered, among many other things, the NYPD so closely over these years. And, of course, the PD and the FD lost so many people on 9/11. Are you talking to firefighters, police officers over the last day?
I think that one of the things that seems to be, this comes at a time where Police Commissioner Kelly is having a hard time. You know, they've canceled a police class because of budget restraints. One of the things, we're at a lowest troop strength since 2000, just before 9/11. We're upwards around 40,000 at the end of the Dinkins administration, thanks to President Clinton's Safe Cities, Safe Streets. So there's a kind of sense that there had been a waning of commitment to policing because of the budget austerity issues. And so in that matrix is the reality that 1,000 officers have been committed pretty much since 9/11 to New York City's standalone intelligence operation, counterintelligence operation, that works around the world in a fairly nuanced and sophisticated way with other municipal police agencies around the world. So the question is, how do you hold that architecture together when it gets farther and farther out from the time when we were attacked?
And what about security around town today? Just on a very practical, here we are Monday morning after this was announced, level. Obviously, New York always feels vulnerable when something like this takes place. Presumably, somebody's going to try to avenge the death of Osama bin Laden in some way. What's the NYPD doing today? What should we expect to see around town? I know that they're saying there's no particular information about any particular threat.
Well, as you saw what happened with the Times Square attempted bombing just last year, what's happened is significant change that's happened is the kind of proliferation of terroristic support for terrorism, where people don't necessarily have to be aligned with al-Qaeda itself, but can, of their own, through the internet and through their own alienation, connect onto that broader issue. And so to that degree, the police department has tried to nuance itself to prepare for that, what we did see last night is Commissioner Kelly sending out pretty much an advisory saying to be on, for the department to be aware of the fact that there was some potential for perhaps reprisals, but it's not like it's going to be totally predictable. So it's a kind of anxiety that we've lived for. And as I came in today, there was just a slight hint of additional police presence, but really nothing heavy-handed.
You want to stay around for a few minutes
take
some of these calls with me? George in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Yes,
hi, George.
Hi. Am I on the air?
You are, sir. Go ahead.
Okay. I was one of the 9/11 survivors. I was on the 55th floor of the North Tower. And through the great assistance of the fire department, I got out. So my first thought today was to thank them for my life. And also, killing Obama is a great thing. I think it was a good thing that we did it. However, Osama bin Laden, we had the opportunity to do that just after the Cole incident, when Madeleine Albright had the same opportunity to get him and chose not to do so. Now, my concern is, why at this juncture are we putting ourselves at incredible risk when we could have captured him and made an example rather than bringing upon us the wrath of many, many terrorists? Believe me, there are many potential terrorists and many, people that would not have been terrorists had not we taken the stand that we did either in Afghanistan or in Iraq.
Well, I know that Madeleine Albright and the Clinton administration,
we had no reason to attack Iraq. There was no need for it. And, the same thing with people that have died in Afghanistan. There's no need for many of those civilians to have died. And I'm afraid that because of this incident, we're going to have incredible retaliation of one kind or another, not only against us, but against others across the world. That's my real concern.
George, thank you. You know, of course, there are people who are going to be eternally angry at either the Clinton administration or the Bush administration, or as I think you're articulating, at both for missed opportunities in the past. And they'll both deny it. They'll say, well, they couldn't really have gotten bin Laden after the call. There really was no such incident where Clinton called them off. And the Bush people will say, well, we really couldn't have gotten them at Tora Bora early in the Afghanistan war and diverted our resources to Iraq. But certainly those things are going to come up and those things are going to be on people's minds. Bob?
I did have the opportunity to sit in on the White House conference call last night that was on background that offered a lot of details that still have not gotten out into the media yet. And one of the things I think the caller makes an interesting point is that this is happening at a time where U.S. relations with Pakistan had deteriorated to the lowest point perhaps since 9/11. One of the things that has been on page 2 and page 5 has been the U.S. increasing use of Predator and Reaper drones, which have had some significant collateral damage in the civilian population. And indeed, estimates between 500 and 3,000 civilians were killed. And so at one point, the Wall Street Journal just last week had a headline story saying that Pakistan was suggesting to Karzai in Afghanistan that he consider in the alternative China to rebuild his country and just to ask the U.S. to go. So the timing is critical. But from listening to that briefing, it appears to me that it is just the specifics lined up such that, you know, evidently this place had been built in 2005, a custom-built place for Osama bin Laden, where evidently this community that's 35 miles north of Islamabad is somewhat like the Boca Raton for the Pakistani military to retire. So there's a lot of questions about who knew what when, but it's clear that as soon as they had credible information, they acted on it. And what is critical is that during the briefing, they said that Osama bin Laden offered resistance in the firefight, which would mean then that under international law, that they had a situation where they, you know, they had to fire back to defend themselves. So we're going to have times to parse this out afterwards. I'm very interested, for instance, in what happens to the individuals. There were two women that were wounded in the attack. There was a woman who was killed in the attack when she was used as a shield allegedly by one of the al-Qaeda operatives. All these details are going to offer us insights into what the backstory really was.
And listeners, you can continue to comment and, for that matter, post your epitaphs for Osama bin Laden. Here lies, fill in the blank, on our comments page at WNYC.org. You can tweet at Brian Lehrer with that on Twitter, and you can go to our Facebook page where we're collecting your epitaphs as well. Bob, a little contrast from our comments page. For example, from Harry from Baltimore, who writes, "I'm not a person who wishes people dead or supports the death penalty, nor do I like to wallow in bloodlust. With that said, I am relieved that Osama bin Laden is dead. He is responsible for so many broken hearts, the survivors of 9/11. Someone posted a picture of the Statue of Liberty holding bin Laden's severed head. I posted to them that kind of imagery makes the U.S. just like them. A severed head? Really? Doesn't that make anyone think of televised beheadings? I think we can celebrate the death, or rather the no longer being, of a bad soul without that." So even in that one comment from Harry from Baltimore, you know, doesn't want anybody dead, acknowledges that he's happy that bin Laden is dead, or relieved, as he says, and then a little grossed out by some of the way that people are celebrating.
Well, and also, I mean, you have to consider this has been, if this was the objective of the entire enterprise, and I don't think it was, it is an awful price. Thousands of American lives. It has been a manhunt that has wasted the national treasury and been part of the reason why we're in our current economic predicament.
Thousands of American lives, 100,000 plus Iraqi lives.
Civilian lives across the world.
And, you know, it depends on who you count. But Tom in Staten Island, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tom. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. I was a 9/11 first responder. I work on the water. Many of us that work on boats in the water rush to the ground zero on 9/11, and I personally spent 3 days there in the recovery operation. And when I heard this news last night, I was overjoyed and overcome with emotion. I'd like to make a notice of one thing I noticed is that many people on the media right now are talking about the whether Al-Qaeda is a continuing operation, whether they're still a viable operation, and that they are, and that regardless of Osama bin Laden being alive or dead, it doesn't matter. That doesn't matter to me, I'll tell you. That guy's dead. He needed to die. He's gone. And I'm very, very happy he is, because he ruined a lot of good people's lives in this world, and it's about time.
Tom, so, would you like to have seen him captured and tried?
To be honest with you, it doesn't really matter to me. He needed to be wiped off the face of this planet. He was a piece of garbage.
Tom, thank you very much. Sue on our Facebook page is among several quoting Mark Twain this morning. Bob, do you know the quote?
No.
I've never wished a man dead, but I have read some obituaries with great pleasure. Elizabeth in Columbia, Missouri. You're on WNYC. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hi, how are you? I'm calling to say that actually not only did bin Laden, but the U.S. government really ruined my life and a lot of other people's lives. A lot of us died months and years after 9/11 because of the air quality down there, and a lot of us are sick, very sick, including children, bankrupt. We lost our jobs, we lost our careers, and I moved to Columbia, Missouri, because the doctors who are hired at the World Trade Center clinic, one of them told me over at Roosevelt Hospital, they won't even get their funding if they say we're sick. They can only turn in that we have certain symptoms.
Even with the Droga Act that recently passed?
Yes. I mean, I'm really disappointed, actually, with your radio station and a lot of New York for turning your backs on us.
Gosh, I feel like we've covered it a lot.
And then Laden's death doesn't really change that. I want our government to take care of its people and quit blaming everybody else for a lot of the problems that are going on in this country that our government and our people can take care of themselves.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your call.
I think there is an opportunity here for a significant reset that President Obama has right now in terms of national priorities. And it's true that the implications of what happened in 9/11 have been with us right along. If you just add in the costs of all this, of how our days change to get into buildings, the millions of hours that are spent by individuals who leave their desk to go bring people in on the first floor if you're in a skyscraper. I mean, and the question is, we saw a little bit of a change under Secretary Napolitano where the ridiculous color-coded system was reconsidered. But it does seem to take an awfully long time in the 21st century for the United States government to learn a new trick.
Florence in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. You have an epitaph?
Yes, Brian. Here lies a man whose intentions were evil, who acted like Allah's invisible servant on earth, but who had the misfortune to still be spotted and captured dead. He should be standing now in front of Allah, waiting to answer whether he was asked to slaughter human beings on earth. I think there should be no question whether he should have been captured dead or alive. The fact is that he's been captured. And what I'll say now is that the Al-Qaeda organization has roots everywhere around the world. What I'll say is we should open our eyes and ears wider now. Anything we see or hear, we should take it serious and say something.
Florence,
thank you.
Thank you so much. And we'll take more of your epitaphs for Osama bin Laden in writing on our comments page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, tweet at Brian Lehrer, or go to our Facebook page. Deborah in Newark. And Deborah, hang on just a second before you start, because listeners, we're going to clear all the other lines except Deborah's. And when Deborah's done, we're going to go to a break. And then we're going to take calls only from Pakistani Americans and any other Muslims, kind of following up on what Florence just said about bin Laden's relationship with Allah. How has he made your life different over the last 10 years? We know the vast majority of you have never been bin Laden fans or supporters, and that he made your life much more difficult in the United States with all the backlash against Muslims and anything else. you know, anyone who appeared to be Muslim, wearing what is perceived as Muslim garb, or however you want to put it. So Muslims and Pakistani Americans as one group among those Muslims, because we'll talk about our two countries' role in this together. You get the next call in at 212-433-WNYC. We're going to clear all the lines except Deborah now. 212-433-9692 for Pakistani Americans and any other Muslim Americans next. But Deborah in Newark, hi, thanks for your patience. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you kindly. I'm less concerned about Osama bin Laden and his effect on me than where are we as Americans 10 years after 9/11, because we in our 40s and 50s and 60s seem not to have advanced one whit. Our children aren't doing any better now in their teens and 20s and their understanding of the world about them and what's required of them than we did 10 years ago. On October 7th, 2001, a Sunday, I was one of three invited speakers at Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church for a hastily put together program called Doing Justice, Shaping a Response to Terrorism and Violence. And my speech title was Vengeance, Justice, and Peace in the Bible. And at the same time, in the midst of that, I was working as a disaster resource consultant for Church World Service, pulling together donations for the recovery at Ground Zero, and that continued into late November. So in the midst of that, I'm doing this speech on the Bible, Vengeance, Justice, and Peace, and at 2 p.m. a woman runs into the room and says, they've just started bombing Afghanistan. And we replied, well, back to before the Stone Age, I guess. But the point of the speech was this. How does the Bible use these words, vengeance, justice, and peace? What are its best-known texts and contexts? How do we understand how our faith traditions direct us to speak and act after September 11th with regard to the U.S. president declaring a global war against terrorism now that it's come to dominate and define, in less than a month, our nation's foreign and domestic policies?
Bob, do you think, is there any chance that you could send us that speech? It sounds so significant, especially right now.
Well, I could do that because I also wrote 5 book manuscripts on the subject from that point on, examining the global war on terror against that backdrop as we moved through it in time and space. And yes, I could do that. But the disturbing thing is we all need a refresher in Chris Hedges' War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning, as we're thinking of the fist-pumping students from George Washington University outside of the White House.
And NYU and others outside Ground Zero. Go ahead.
We can think of the photo on Chris Hedges' front cover of his first edition of people outside of, you know, the destroyed towers with their fingers up and the candles and the flags. We've not gotten anywhere.
And Deborah, does this for you coexist at all with anything like what Sue posted on Facebook that I read a minute ago, the Mark Twain quote, I've never wished a man dead, but I have read some obituaries with great pleasure?
I think no. No, that's a contradiction. I feel too strongly about relative to where we are. I'm thinking more of the Churchill bromide. Mm-hmm. The further back we look, the further forward we can see. We're doomed to repeat what we've already done to bring this upon ourselves.
Thank you for your call. I really appreciate it. Bob Henley, thank you very much.
You.
Keep up the great reporting. And we'll continue with calls from Pakistani Americans, other Muslim Americans, on this day after Osama bin Laden was killed. And then we will break down the blow-by-blow of what actually happened, details still emerging. And we'll talk about it in terms of U.S. national security and global politics, all coming up as the Brian Lehrer Show continues with our special coverage. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. It's special coverage of the death of Osama bin Laden on our show today. And as part of our coverage, for those of you not up late last night, we'll keep playing excerpts from the president's address as we set up different conversations. Here was a very important part of the president's speech, I thought, last night, after he said the United States must remain vigilant, even in light of bin Laden's death.
We must and we will remain vigilant at home and abroad. As we do, We must also reaffirm that the United States is not and never will be at war with Islam. I've made clear, just as President Bush did shortly after 9/11, that our war is not against Islam. Bin Laden was not a Muslim leader. He was a mass murderer of Muslims. Indeed, al-Qaeda has slaughtered scores of Muslims in many countries, including our own. So his demise should be welcomed by all who believe in peace and human dignity.
And so with the president talking about, as President Bush said right after 9/11, that our war on terror is not a war on Islam, now we open the phones to give voice to Muslim Americans with your feelings right now and perhaps your Osama bin Laden epitaphs. And as your calls are coming in, here's a little bit more about the president talking in this clip about the cooperation between the United States and Pakistan in the operation yesterday and beyond.
Over the years, I've repeatedly made clear that we would take action within Pakistan if we knew where bin Laden was. That is what we've done. But it's important to note that our counterterrorism cooperation with Pakistan helped lead us to bin Laden and the compound where he was hiding. Indeed, bin Laden had declared war against Pakistan as well and ordered attacks against the Pakistani people. Tonight, I called President Zardari, and my team has also spoken with their Pakistani counterparts. They agree that this is a good and historic day for both of our nations. And going forward, it is essential that Pakistan continue to join us in the fight against al-Qaeda and its affiliates.
President Obama last night. Ahmed in Woodside, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling, Ahmed.
Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for covering this issue. First of all, I just want to focus in two things. One, within the Muslim community, this is a great relief also within the Muslim community because bin Laden and his group representing the extreme view of anti-Muslim within Muslim community for jihadist views and how you change the status quo. So if the viewing the evil empire, America, and how you change that, this is absolutely wrong, and majority, 99% of Muslim community disagree with that. And Egyptian revolution proven a change could be, you know, achieved by nonviolence means. The second point, I came back from event last night. My wife and I and my son had a discussion. My son was very happy and said, "Oh, wow, this is very good relief. I hope this is going to be no discussion about that no more because this hurting us." And my wife was mixed feeling because it was a celebration and this stuff. And she said, "This is not celebration." Mm-hmm. And that's I want to bring this to
so
within
really,
the Muslim community. We have a lot of discussion, and this is going to open dialogue and this open eyes within the Muslim community.
I'm going to leave it there and get some other folks on. But that's a really, really instructive and great story, and I appreciate your telling us about your reaction and your wife's reaction and your son's reaction and how they were each a little bit different. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
WNYC's Arun Venugopal is also with us. And Arun, wasn't that interesting from Ahmed? You know, all that stuff juxtaposed together. His relief, his son's relief, his wife
yeah.
being kind of grossed out by the cheering, fist-pumping crowds.
Sure. Sure. I mean, I definitely saw the reaction within, say, on Facebook as well amongst friends, some of whom were just disgusted by what they saw as the jingoism, others who were just thrilled by these reactions. I mean, Muslims and Muslim American groups have been, you know, sort of like paying attention to in the last few hours. You see, generally, I think a sense of relief is definitely a common word that I'm hearing a lot. People who feel like that problem is kind of off our shoulders now. And so there's an excitement there. It is also, as he was just saying, providing a platform for dialogue. A lot of major groups, CARE, the Council of American Islamic Relations, a very controversial group, they're having a discussion on it today. MPAC, the Muslim Public Affairs Council, is also trying to use this opportunity today to talk about this and try to figure out what this means. They're all sending out messages saying, we're very happy about this, and also giving props to the president. It was so important for them to hear the president saying he's not a Muslim leader, he's a mass murderer, making that distinction and sort of putting them on the right side in that official way, mm-hmm. and giving them an opening, whereas normally they're the ones who have to react defensively to acts of terrorism or that kind of a thing. So it's there's a lot of kind of excitement there. And actually, people are also having fun on Twitter. People are sending jokes around and you got a good one? Yeah. Not at this moment. I'm not sure. Exactly. But also, like, just pointing out, like, you know, sending around pictures. There have been all these celebrations at Ground Zero, Times Square. Shahid Aminullah is the editor of altmuslim.com, and I noticed on Twitter he had retweeted a couple comments, two of which I'll mention. One was which he said, somebody said, man with I'm Muslim shirt leading chants at Ground Zero, which I thought was interesting. The other one being, check it out, I can see hijabis cheering in Times Square on Fox News. Mm. And his response was, yes, a victory for Muslims too.
That's great. That's really great. Saisal in the Five Towns area of Long Island. You're on WNYC. Hi. Saisal, is that you? All right, we're going to try to get back to Saisal. How about Ahmed in Edison? You're on WNYC. Ahmed?
Hello, yes, sir. Good morning. Today is a day for a victory for Islam. Reason I'm saying that, because if he's a true Muslim, why they are bombing in Pakistan so many mass when the people, innocent people, are praying and killing them? And also, let me tell you, this being created by United States and supported by General Zia-ul-Haq, okay? And he was, and that time is, all criminals come from that Afghanistan to Pakistan and settle over there. This is a very drawback from since that time to now. We never have any suicide bombing. Since then, start a suicide bombing. We cannot even sleep. We cannot even walk on the street without a fear. We cannot send our children to the school without a fear. If we send it to the school, and I don't know what happens tomorrow, what kind of news we're going to hear after that. So this is a big victory for Pakistan and Pakistani peoples and Islams. And also, whatever I'm saying, I'm strongly condemning that people. They are not a Muslim if they are killing innocent people. Islam never allowed to kill any innocent people.
Ahmad, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it. And for all the people who say, where are the moderate Muslims? Where are the people condemning them? We have tens and tens and tens of people lining up to talk like Ahmed just talked. Saisal in the Five Towns area, let's try again. Hi.
Hi, I'm sorry about that.
No problem.
No, I mean, I was about to go to sleep, and I heard that my friend, who's NYPD, texted me that Obama is dead, and right away I went into CNN.
Osama.
And it kind of gave me a sense of relief, because this guy really has destroyed the psyche or the morale of the young Pakistani-Americans or even Muslim-Americans. I mean, I know the kids, you know, the young kids who go to high school in, you know, Long Island or you know, anywhere, and they are kind of, you know, ones and twos are American. I mean, are Pakistani kids and their whole...
There's a lot of backlash.
And it's like, I mean, these kids be good and everything, but just that they just get labeled as a Pakistani, and or as soon as they know where you're from, Pakistan, right away, I think they want to, like, duck or something, you know, that something's gonna bad is gonna happen to them.
Right. And so I'm gonna leave it there. And Arun Venugopal, there may be an immediate backlash, a short-term uptick in backlash, as people look at people who look Pakistani, look like, you know, their impression of a Muslim or an Arab or whatever, and as they're jumping for joy about the death of Osama bin Laden, kind of take it out on somebody.
I mean, I guess you never know how some crazy people out there can take out their excitement. The people I've spoken to so far do not sense that same kind of concern, that threat at this moment. They're generally having a good time, sort of, or more analytical time rather than fear.
Saeed in Newark, you're on WNYC. Hi, Saeed.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Well, I was just trying to present a viewpoint of the Pakistani Muslims. I think they have been one of the people who have suffered the most from Osama bin Laden. Specifically, you know, the Pakistani community here in America, they have been kind of targeted. You may recall that a lot of Muslims had to, Pakistani Muslims specifically, had to register during the early 2000s. They had to be registered Americans. So in that, a lot of families were just, you know, separated. You know, some people had may have come here without regular papers, so they kind of had to leave the country. There was a lot of fear in the community, and there are some issues within our community as well. But in Pakistan, hundreds of, maybe thousands of people have died because of this insurrection, especially because of Osama bin Laden creating that situation. The war, the military personnel are involved in that, and spending millions of dollars in this war that Pakistan was dragged into because of Osama bin Laden.
Saeed, what do you think about these reports trying to figure out how involved the Pakistani government was in this? The official U.S. position is that they were not even informed of this impending raid yesterday. But this happened so deep inside Pakistan, as you know, 100 miles from Islamabad. That's not near the Afghanistan border. So if U.S. Navy SEALs were getting in that deep, plus the CIA operatives, you would think that somebody had to know about it and let them go.
I would certainly believe that the Pakistani government was involved. They had to know, like you just mentioned. Any air force or any helicopters cannot just wander into this property, especially in the area which is a military zone. So there was a tacit approval. But the concern that I'm only talking to two Pakistanis, and all of them have said that it's why did the farmer's body was disposed right away? That leaves a very big question mark.
Saeed, thank you very much. And one of the things we'll be talking about with our next guest, Bobby Ghosh, coming up after the news, is will those people who were asking for the birth certificate last week start asking for the death certificate now? Abdullah in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Abdullah.
Yes, hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
As an Afghan person, I'm not still, you know, celebrating and
not yet
jumping up and down, though we are the happiest because he brought tremendous pain to our country and to our people and bad name and everything. But I really, what I'm waiting to know more details about Pakistani intelligence and military services' role in this, you know, in his death. If the Pakistanis knew him for that, he was hiding right there in Islamabad, and they didn't tell the Americans, then they bear great responsibility. But if this was an American-only operation, the Americans somehow threw their assets on the ground, they found about his whereabouts, and they kept it secret until the last minute, then it's really cause for celebration, because I really don't trust the Pakistani intelligence services.
Abdullah, thank you very much, and I got to leave it there because we're going to run out of time. But interesting contrast, Abdullah, with our previous caller. And as I guess you know, many, many Pakistanis are relieved to see that perhaps their government did participate in this and didn't just enable terrorist organizations plus bin Laden as an individual to stay hidden and stay operating. But obviously there are divisions in Pakistan among this kind of thing. WNYC's Arun Venugopal, in our last 30 seconds here, I guess, you know, over the sweep of 10 years, a community that might have complained about being invisible became really too visible.
Yeah, definitely. Certainly in this last year, we've had no end of, you know, exciting, eventful sort of moments in the most negative sense in terms of 1 year ago, of course, we had Faisal Shahzad, the Times Square bomber, and that really sort of set off this chain of events which seems to be going forward. Now we see, I think, what seems to be sort of these moderating events, you know, what's happening in the Middle East, of course, and this event itself. What I'm hearing from some people is sort of an excitement. Is it possible that now with the Middle East and combined with this kind of a thing that we don't see really any more Osamas being possible, enabled in the future.
Let's hope you're right. Let's see. Arun Venugopal, WNYC reporter, thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
And listeners, we'll continue. Next, we will break down the chain of events leading to the killing of Osama bin Laden.